Recording has been started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the Translation and Transliteration of Contact Information TDP Working Group on the 29th of May, 2014. On the call today, we have Peter Green, Chris Dillon, Jim Galvin, Petter Reinforth, Jennifer Chung, and Justin Chu. We have apologies for Moody Van Snick. From staff, we have Julie Hedlund and myself, Terry Agnew. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Chris.
Thank you very much for that. I'll just say at the beginning of the meeting that there aren't very many of us today, but I think probably the best thing to do is to continue going through these various documents. We have a lot of them, and I think we need to use these meetings to work our way through them. Now, the other thing here is that the mailing list can be used at any time to suggest comments or corrections, input for these documents. So I think that's a way of opening it up a little bit anyway. If we move into Agenda Point 3, the Statements of Interest. This is an obligatory agenda point, so I need to ask everybody whether there has been a change of in Statement of Interest since the last call. I see nothing in the chat or on the phone, so that means we can move forwards. And that means that we're into the responses, and in fact we're still working on the document we were using this time last week, and specifically I think that we had got to number 31, so we can perhaps pick up there. And number 31 is a new issue, so it's issue number 6, and this is when should any new policy relating to transformation of contact information come into effect? And just work through the various responses we had to this, so you should be able to scroll on your Adobe Connect screens. Let us hope it's working well. I was on Adobe earlier and we had all sorts of problems. Okay, so the first response, number 31, is the Thai GAC representative, and basically the summary of that is at the earliest possible timeline. Okay, and to read the response, it's rather interesting because it's just mentioning that phishing is a major problem. So that's what's driving that. And they regard a transformation policy as being phishing mitigation. Okay, now would anybody like to make any comment about that one, or shall we move on into number 32? I don't see anything in the chat room, so let us do that. Number 32 is the NCSG, and the summary of that is the after the conclusion of the two post-expert working group PDPs. Now, this may just be me, but my understanding, and I'm very willing to be corrected, but as far as I know, I thought there was only one PDP, and this is the board-directed one, which happens after the expert working group on directory services. So obviously I'm quite interested, I don't know, Jim or Julie, whether that's correct, but I'm just quite interested so I've got both of you with your hands up. Okay, yeah, Jim, would you like to say something about that?
Yes, I'll just confirm that the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group is just an expert working group. We're not a PDP.
Mm-hmm.
And Julie will probably confirm this for the Directory Services Working Group, but they're just an expert working group too. It's not a PDP.
Thank you very much. Julie, I can see you agreeing in Adobe Connect. It may be that I just heard that there was a rumor that there would be a board-directed PDP, but okay, if it's a rumor, then we probably shouldn't. In fact, that does mean that comment should be changed, so we can legitimately say that, you know, that we aren't expecting PDPs, or, you know, I certainly have heard a rumor, but we should probably discount it. Jim, would you like to continue there?
Yes, and Jim, for the transcript, I'll just observe that my expectation is that these other two groups, the Directory Services and the IRD Working Group, are more than likely to finish before this group does anyway, just as a practical consideration. So, you know, while it's a valid concern to be aware of, wanting those groups to finish before this one, as a practical matter, I really don't think it's going to be an issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, I think you're probably right there. Okay, thank you very much. That does mean that we need to rewrite that particular comment, and maybe we make both the points that officially there aren't other PDPs, and the likelihood at the moment is that we will be going after they have finished. And Julie is, in fact, typing in the chat that she's made that change. So thank you very much for clearing up all of that. Any other issues to do with that comment, or shall we move forward into number 33? Okay, off we go then. So this is the IPC, and this is basically the same as the TAI response, so it's as soon as possible. They're just saying, as a matter of interest, it should have been in place before the release of the new GTLDs, in their opinion. Lastly, we've got FICP, again, they're actually saying the same thing. Okay, any questions before we leave issue 6 and head into issue 7? Let us do just that. Okay, so issue 7, so it's basically who should decide, who should bear the burden of transformation to a single language or transliteration to a single script. And so might as well move and start with number 35. And so ALAC is saying all affected parties. And giving examples, registrants, resellers, registrars, registries. There's a slightly exasperated note from me there, saying, who makes the final decision? I don't know whether we're likely to get to the bottom of this, but... Okay. Any other comments about number 35, or shall we move into number 36? Which is the IPC, in fact. Okay, in fact, they are doing the same. I'm just checking that they've not added anything else, but I think that's really it is the tenor of it. And they've got the same exasperated comment from me. Okay, and then if there aren't any comments about that, we can move into number 37. And, and this is a radically different opinion. So this is saying that the registrant should be the only stakeholder making this decision. So that is just totally different. And then there is this thing that there shouldn't be a policy requiring a specific stakeholder to bear the costs, because basically it's really up to the registrant. Very, very slight contradiction there, it strikes me, because they are a stakeholder. But I think it is. I think actually the meaning is clear. Now, is there any comment about that, perhaps? Okay. Thank you very much. Let us have a look at record 38, which is again FICPI. And they are saying, divided between the registrants and the registrar. I haven't put them in the final column because they aren't actually one of our stakeholder groups. Okay, any questions about issue 7 before we leave it for issue 8? Well, issue 8 is who does your stakeholder group or constituency believe should bear the cost, bearing in mind the limits and scope set in the initial report? Okay, and then we've got quite a long response from the TIGAC representative. So the summary of it is just that the cost should be so it's the cost of conversion from local language into common language, it should be the registrants, and the cost for validation should belong to registrars. And Jim is asking a question.
Yeah, so Jim Gallen for the transcript probably should have been saying that before too. Just a clarity question. In thinking about the entire response to these questions, I guess I'm a little surprised. And the official language of Thailand does not include English, does it? I mean, and is there a that's one question. And the second question would be: is there a broad base of English-speaking people there? I'm just trying to understand sort of where their comments are coming from.
Thank you very much for that. No, I don't believe that English is an official language of Thailand. I don't think we've got any Thai representatives on the call today, but as far as I know, it isn't. It is in Singapore, but not Thailand. And then the question as to, just how many people have a good knowledge of English in the country, and my impression is perhaps not all that many. So that is the situation as far as I understand it. It may be slightly out of date. I had a lot of contact with Thailand, but it's a long time ago.
So just a follow-up question then. I mean, it really does strike me as, I'm trying to find a soft word to use because I can only think of words like, conflict or disingenuous, completely opposed to what I would expect from a sovereign state like that to be making comments the way they're making. So I'm just curious, does anyone have any hints as to what would be the source of why they're saying the things they're saying? I just find it so interesting.
I think, this is Chris again, I think that they the answers to it may be there are a couple of quite long documents that they posted. They're on our responses page, and there they went into considerable detail about various suggestions, and I think certainly they seem to be very keen that that transformation would occur in one place, and that it be basically organized by the government. I think that is the suggestion they have, and also that there is quite a lot of talk about transformation and whether translation or transliteration should be used. That's how I remember it, but I think really ignore what I'm saying now. I suspect the answers are in those two long documents on the responses page.
Okay, so thank you. I mean, I'll go back and take a look at that and see if anything comes out at me. I just, usually from a community, oftentimes you understand why they have the view that they have, and I'm just looking at this and I'm thinking about their comment, and I just, it's not immediately obvious to me, why they have this particular position. It just feels like there ought to be a reason for that, and I don't know what it is, but okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so if we come back to it, I'll just double check that there's nothing major that in there that we should comment. Other things which should be commented on. Oh yes, in fact they are. They are saying that it's key that the transformation be economic. And they're sort of advocating a demand-orientated approach, and that's that's actually a new thing. Actually, come to think of it, that should be added to the summary, that they are talking about a demand-oriented approach. Okay, Peter, would you like to say something about that?
I just wanted to say I think Jim's point is very well taken, and that Pichinan and May have actually been quite active in the working group throughout our meetings. I don't think either of them are on the call this time, but I propose that maybe, Chris, you could make a note of this to come back to this question in the next call, because they have been very active in the working group thus far, and I think it would be great to hear from them in terms of where their thoughts or their comments here are coming from.
Yes, I'll do that. Thank you very much. Okay. Now, unless there are other comments about number 39, we can move into number 40. The EC, and so they have this sort of a pyramid system, is what I call it. So it's registry should bear the cost of translation, of transformation of registrar data, and registrar should bear the cost of translation and transliteration of registrant data. I think one note, the note that I've put there in the column is, often people talk about registrars and registries carrying charges, but there's always a tendency for registrants to end up with them, so that's why that note is there. Any other comments about that record? Okay, and Julia's just saying that she's added the demand-orientated thing to the last record. Okay, record number 41 is ALAC, and the summary here is... So these are... So ALAC are actually coining major new concepts. So they have this these concepts of general or specialized use. So it's a useful concept, this. So, you know, general use would be... I think specialized use, somebody is paying for it to be transformed. I think that's the distinction. But, the comment I made here is, the issue may be, how is it possible to define whether a particular use, like security, for example, that's probably specialized use. But, you know, as with all definitions, I suspect that might, that might be quite a big issue, whether it's clear whether a particular use is special or general. Let's just go back to that. And so, available to the general public without charging a fee. So, who is? That's general use. And specialized use could be some data requester. Oh, choosing the language of required data. So that's, you know, that could even be, it's not just English or ASCII, it could be other languages there. And examples of specialized use are given as law enforcement, IP, security, those are the examples. But as I say, and also in the chat, Petta is typing that there could be quite a large grey zone. So, there might be a challenge here just to build up examples of what we understand by general and what we understand by specialized. That could be the way out of this. Okay. Any comments about number 41, or shall we move into the next one? Okay, and the next one is the IPC, and they are saying the cost should be divided between registries and registrars, and also bringing up the point I made earlier about final responsibility lies on the registrant. Their response, that one. Any comments about that, or shall we move on? Okay, number 43 is the NCSG, and they are saying that it should be the end user of who is, and again, here I've got a clarifying note saying, are they saying that all use of, maybe this is exaggerating it, but all use of who is should be charged? They're saying that anything apart from that is just going to be moving the charges from one stakeholder to another. Have one last look at that. Yeah, the end user of who is should bear the cost, and that's a de facto rule. Okay. Any questions about that one, or shall we move into the next record, which is FICP? Very simple. They are just saying the cost should be divided between registries and registrars. And that brings us to the end of that issue, which is number 8. And we're then into the any other information section. The end is in sight. And we have NCSG, and using some pretty strong language, actually. They are saying it would be destructive and anti-competitive to burden new IDN registrars with additional costs which discriminate against non-ASCII domain names. It's certainly very clear and quite robust. And I think you can just see the frustration there that we've waited a long time for our IDN and registrars, and do we really want to clobber them with these additional costs? I can see that point of view. Any comments about that, or shall we? Okay, and I think that brings us to the last record, and this is a Chinese GAC representative record. And they are just making a point which, in fact, we've seen before, and it is about basically in the Chinese case collecting and verifying information in the Chinese language, and I think that's no surprise at all, making a case for doing that. But we have heard other people saying, if we don't know Chinese, how are we able to verify information? So there are differing opinions on this point, but this is just putting the case for doing everything presumably in the original language. Okay. Any comments about that record, or in fact about anything that we've done now, because that is the end of this document? It's taken us a couple of meetings to get through it. Okay, thank you very much. In that case, we are free to move forwards, there are a couple of short documents which I think we might do well to get rid of. Just sort them out quite quickly. And one of them is the Margie Millam's document, A Model for Exploring Who is Accuracy. I'll just have a quick go at that. Okay, I've just posted that particular document into the chat. And it is just a very short thing, just a couple of pages, but I thought it would be good just to have a look at that. Wait a moment, I don't know whether it's possible to display it in Adobe Connect, but just so that you can get it on your screens anyway. Okay, and this, according to the document, it looks as if we can't display that document, but just a moment, something's happening. Okay, there it is. Thank you for that, Julie. And one of the things that come out of the document is that there seem to be several definitions of several definitions of accuracy. That's the point. So it's syntactic accuracy, operational accuracy, and identity accuracy. So, and the examples here are that syntactic accuracy would be the data satisfies specified syntactic constraints. And so that would mean, is this email address formatted as an email address? So I guess an example of that would be, does it have an at sign in the middle? So that's just that's a sort of syntactic aspect. Then you've got operational accuracy, and this is assessment of data for intended use in a routine or in routine functions. So that would be in the email example I just gave you. It would be, can an email address actually receive email? So operational, that's the operational aspect. And then last but not least, identity. I guess this is the difficult one. Assessment that data correspond to the real-world identity for the registrant. So I guess it is, does this email really belong to this person whose address we know? It's that sort of thing and would have to be done manually. Now, I'm not an expert on this, so before I go any further, I would just like to ask whether anybody has any comment about that, because if I've misunderstood something there, I would really like to know now, and I see Jim's hand go up. Jim.
So this is Jim Galvin. I just want to observe that two things. One, I mean, the origin of this validation taxonomy is from an ESSAC document. There's another criteria that the ESSAC document talks about how to distinguish these three types of validation, syntactic, operational, and identity, which is probably just worth mentioning here so that we have complete information. And that is whether or not the validation can be done manually or can be automated. The observation in the ESSAC document is that syntactic validation is expected to be largely automated.
Mm-hmm.
In that respect, syntactic validation should probably be performed by all relevant and appropriate parties, because you do it once and then it's always there. Operational validation is probably semi-automated. Some things can be automated and some things cannot. So, for example, you can probably do email address validation in an automated way. That's done today in a variety of, not too many, but a couple different mechanisms for which that can be relatively automated. In contrast, identity validation is something which would be expected to be largely manual, if not entirely manual. So, you want to confirm that an identity really represents a real-world thing. Variety of ways of doing that, but again, probably involves a physical person and physical contact and things like that. So just whether or not something can be automated or manual is another characteristic of those three types of validation that are useful to be aware of. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Jim. Okay, now it's quite a short document. I'll just have a quick look and see. It may be that there has actually been some progress made on this project since this document came out. But anyway, I think for the time being, that's more or less the summary of that. Any other comments about that before we move on to various other things that we have received? Okay, thank you very much. Now, the next thing is actually not on our agenda, but I would like to deal with it anyway, because it is very short. And this is the National Arbitration Forum. Actually, there was a correspondence with them. Unfortunately, it's an email correspondence, but I'll just bring that to your attention. I think we, you know, we need to be seen to have be aware of what was going on there. And I think the summary of that recent email correspondence, which you can find just by looking on our email list, is really that from their point of view, from the National Arbitration Forum point of view, they're really copying and pasting data as displayed in WHOIS. So as far as they are concerned, it's irrelevant whether the information is accurate or in Latin or some other script. And if you go down and look at the correspondence in greater detail, then I think we may even be able to. We can actually see that. So and it's quite colourful the way it's written because if they do get an address something like Mickey Mouse 1234 Main Street, they're not going to query that. So that's rather a colourful way of indicating that that's the procedure that's happening at the moment there. And I hope that I think there was an inquiry about exactly what was happening there a couple of meetings ago. I hope that makes that clear. I'm just double checking through it to see whether there's anything else we should briefly mention. Not as far as I can see. Okay, Petter, would you like to pick up something?
No, just a short explaining and follow-up. I was the one that raised the question, so I wanted to see how they were actually dealing with this. So thanks for asking them and getting it out.
Not at all. Thank you very much. Okay, so that's we've just got through those two short documents, and so we need now to have a look at a longer document. I'll just make sure that we do these in the correct order. Now, I think the next one is the interim report from the Expert Working Group on Internationalized Registration Data. There's some sections in there which I will just link into the Adobe, which is, looks a very strange address. I hope that works. Things are happening on the screen. Now, for those of you who have access to the document, it's page 17. Let's be even more specific than that. Yeah, I think it is just 17. 17 and 18 that we're going to be looking at, not the whole document, because it's only that bit is relevant. Oh, yes. Thank you very much. And that's exactly the correct place. So it's this bit about the working group did note the following issues related to translation and transliteration. I think we probably need to go through this quite slowly because we need to be. I think we need to address these questions now. Some of them we may already have addressed, in which case, fine. But we will need to make a decision about what we do with anything that we haven't addressed. So I'll go through this at a quite slow rate. So it starts, if registrants are allowed to submit localized registration data, what languages or scripts are registrars or registry operators expected to support? Yes. I mean, we haven't really looked at things from this angle. We have looked at it from, how should things be registered? Which languages should be used? So, for example, we've had people saying, Chinese companies should just be able to register in Chinese without using any English at all. But we're not. Perhaps we haven't looked at it from the registrar and registry point of view quite to the same extent. And if registrants have got total freedom to register in any language, then that really implies that registrars and registries are also going to have to be able to cope with all of those languages. So, question is, what do we do with this question? Now Jim has something he would like to say about this.
Yes, so Jim Galvin for the transcript. I would also add something to think about with this question is to consider what support means. On the one hand, from a technical point of view, at its simplest level, support could be that everyone is simply required to be able to accept some kind of UTF-8 encoding, and a registrar then just has a little bit of implementation to ensure that whatever they get from a registrant, they can encode in that way, and then that's what gets passed around, and that covers it. And then there's no real obligation, there's no real difficulty, regardless of what's input. On the other hand, support might be providing relevant information in the local language for the registrant and going forth with that. And then as a specific detail that might be interesting in this, one of the issues that we're focusing on a great deal in the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group is we've made the observation that contact information, postal addresses in particular, are the format is defined by postal authorities, which are typically aligned with sovereign states. So now you get into an interesting question of, if I'm going to support a local language, does that mean I have to support the local postal authority requirements in that country that uses that language? So again, my question for this group is to consider whether or not you want to talk about what support really means. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think both the original question in the document and also the support question are really interesting, and I think we should be discussing both of them, and I think that they should be added to our list of questions, in fact. I've no intention to keep on adding questions endlessly. We'll never, if I did that, we'd never finish. But I think both of these are, I mean, it might be possible to modify existing questions to just to extend out this sort of area. But I think both of those aspects are highly relevant. Yes, both the question, both viewing it viewing it more from the registrar's and registry operator's point of view, and also this. Exactly what is meant by support. That would be my suggestion. Whether anybody has any comments about that. The other thing here is, just for ease of administration, in the report these are given bullet points, but I would like to refer to them with numbers, because otherwise it's going to be very confusing, which point here are we talking about. So I'm going to be calling that last one number one, because that way at least we know what we are dealing with. So Any other feelings about that one, or shall we move down and consider the next one, perhaps? Okay, so number two is if registrants are allowed to submit internationalized registration data, certainly seems to be some demand for that, whether to require that users submit a corresponding single common script version of the internationalized registration data. Okay, now I feel this is a different case because these issues we have spoken about many, many times. So I feel it is safe not to add this question. We've got something similar. We've spoken about it at length. So that would be my recommendation to you. I don't know whether anybody agrees or disagrees, but I think this is quite a different case from the first one. We spoke about this sort of thing, particularly in our early meetings, in fact. Okay, if there aren't comments about that, then let us move into number three. That is, if registrants are required to submit a single common script version of the internationalized registration data, are users expected to submit a translated version, a transliterated version, or either? Okay. Again, actually, this is pretty close to what I've just said about question number two, because we spoke about this at length, particularly in our earlier meetings. And in fact, the options here aren't the only options. So I think it really, to some extent, depends on what part of the address we are talking about. So when we were discussing this on the list, quite often we said that addresses are really best transliterated. However, organizational names are often best translated. However, people then said, well, you know, in China, for example, there are a lot of companies which just do not have translated English names, so it's not possible to translate, well, at least it's possible to translate them, but we wouldn't recommend that because there isn't a standard translation, so this is a high-risk activity. And so perhaps transliteration might be the way to go in the case of those, you know, for example, Chinese companies with no standard English translation of their name. And you know, I'm just using them as an example, but I hope that makes it clear. Now, since then, our early discussion was very much along those lines. That seemed to be something that might have been quite useful. However, as Jim was just mentioning, the postal standards, it may also be the case, because frankly, we spoke about something on the list saying, perhaps that we want to transliterate addresses and translate organization names. And we said, you know, this is something we could actually say of all languages. And it's actually quite a simple solution. However, if we've actually looked at the responses coming into the various questions we've asked, I think that opinion is not a majority opinion. So, and it's more likely that that standards would be followed. And in this particular case, we would be talking about the UPU standards. So there are clear standards about what addresses look like. I don't think they cover organizational names, but that would mean effectively that it would be necessary to follow the UPU standards, and they are different for each company. For each country. That is why I was avoiding that. cards on table because it is complicated. It's different for each country. But the positive side of that is that the countries tend to be quite used to those standards. And they are standards. They are clear. So, I think that's... So I actually feel that for number three, as for number two, that we don't really need to add questions because our existing questions have dealt with this, and we have spoken at length on this on previous calls on this subject. So that's my recommendation. But I wonder if anybody has any comments about any of that. Taking a note. Thank you very much. That brings us down to question number four. Now we're starting to time out. Yeah, but I think we've probably got enough time to do it, so I'll just speed up a bit. If registrants are required to submit a single Common Script version of the internationalized registration data and the user is unfamiliar with or unable to submit such a transformation, are registrars or registry operators expected to provide assistance? And if so, how would such assistance be manifested? Right. I think we are caught on this one. It's very relevant, but we haven't really spoken all that much about this aspect, to what extent there could be a responsibility. The other issue that comes up here is, whether the single Common Script version is obligatory. Yet another issue is with some scripts, it's actually possible to transliterate automatically. Cyrillic script, Greek, some scripts you can do automatically, but then others are absolutely impossible. Japanese would be a good example, I think, or nearly impossible. Okay, I'll just update you. Julia's typing that she has added the ones I have suggested. Now, let me emphasize, these are recommendations. My understanding is what I have just said, but obviously, somebody can come in and say, no, actually, this isn't adequately. Perhaps number two or number three weren't adequately covered, and we do want them in there. But I feel that it is all right to skip those two. Well, not to skip them, because we've already done them, but anyway. Right. And okay, that's also fine by me. Julie is saying that she's actually added all of them, which but that's also fine by me. I think we probably get off relatively lightly with them because, as I say, we have spent considerable time considering them. But yes, as regards number four, then I think we say it's a fair cop. If that's fair, I think we probably do need to consider this. It's a useful additional thing, really. What additional assistance? What can be done automatically, what can't? Okay, perhaps we still have a few more minutes, so let us move into number five. And this is... if registrants are required to submit a single Common Script version and an internationalized version of their registration data, so this would be, for example, they're submitting Chinese script data, but they're also transliterating into Pinyin, should there be a requirement to detect whether both literally match each other? Okay. it's related to questions we've already considered, but I think it's rather an interesting additional aspect. I'm not very happy about the word literally, because I think often it is possible to transform in several ways, and the several ways are still accurate, but I don't really know what literally means here. I suppose it's something that's very, very, very loyal to the original language, but possibly not particularly good English. So it might, specific example may be use of something like jie in Chinese, which means sort of road or street. Actually, it's more like street. And you're using jie rather than street, because jie is literally what the original was, but it's actually sort of still in Chinese. Maybe it's that sort of thing. But anyway, I do feel that this is an interesting additional element, so I think I err on the side of including this. Okay. We are very near the end of the hour, let me see. We can't complete this, and it's actually not such a bad thing, because it's by stopping in the middle, it means we get to look at this in two different meetings. It just gives us a bit more time to think about it. Just coming back to the agenda briefly, I don't think we've got any amendments to the work plan I am aware of. The work plan is on the screen, but as I say, I don't think there's anything I am aware of there. And any other business? I don't have any. I don't know whether anybody else would like to raise something quickly. In that case, I've been all over the place this last week, so I'm just double checking that I'm here next week. I am here next week. Okay, so I think in that case, if we just continue this again, same time next week, and we have one more document after this one too, it's two more documents to go through once we've got through this next week. So thank you very much for covering such a lot of ground in just one meeting. Just really, really good, because these documents have been lying on my desk. I've been really wanting to get through them. So it's good to see. It's really good that we've got through so much today. And I'll very much look forward to doing something similar with the rest of this document and two others next week. So thank you very much for attending the call.